Someone else to attack Writhe. Someone else with primal powers? And who would that be? She shrugs. Or you might have drugged him, for all I know, until he believed he was mind-controlled. All I'm saying is that it obviously needed testing before such a rash decision was made. Bloody outrageous. The sound of footfalls on leaves turns my head, and I turn to see Raphael striding through the grass behind us. My heart speeds up at the sight of him, looking divine in his crisp white shirt and navy trousers. He's gazing right at me, the golden sunlight glinting in his pale eyes. He carries a small valise that will be part of our disguise. There you are, he says quietly. Ginevra stands and flashes him a charming smile. Thank the gods you're here. I've missed your company, Raph. You're always terribly amusing. Is he really? I murmur. We didn't see anything of concern at the tavern, she goes on. Four men and two women went in during the past hour. Three men stepped out. I'd estimate that's normal traffic on a day like this. No sign of an ambush.
Good.
Raphael's jaw clenches.
Ginevra, I need you to stay here, on the lookout, at least until Nia and I get into the cottage. If you see anything that looks like an ambush or attack, run for backup.
She crosses her arms. Are you sure you don't want a more experienced agent to go with you? Someone who knows you better?
We discussed this. Nia's magic might come in handy. And you're the fastest rider among us. We need you to deliver messages to and from command. For now, stay hidden and keep a lookout for anyone suspicious approaching town.
He turns and starts walking down the hill. The autumn landscape is bathed in flaming shades, gilded by the sun. I follow him, carefully avoiding the thorny branches. I'm wearing a pale blue dress as part of my disguise, and I don't want my costume to be accidentally ripped. Raphael cuts me a sharp glare.
So, we're back to where we started, are we?
Your friend, Ginevra, is fucking lovely, by the way, I mutter. I have a million questions I want to ask him about what he said to me, but this isn't the time. We're about to go into a very dangerous situation, and we both need to be focused. I didn't need any emotional turmoil turning me into the next Alex. As we near the town, Raphael glances at me.
Our cover story is that we just got married,
he says.
We'll walk around a bit first and observe, then head to the tavern to meet the contact. Try to act as if you don't hate me.
I can act.
Oh, believe me, I know you can act.
An edge undercuts his velvety tone, and he's giving me an expression I cannot interpret. We're already at the cobbled road that rings the town. Raphael grabs my hand and gives me what looks like a loving smile. We walk through town, just a couple of newlyweds, hand in hand. And that's all people around us see, the two of us looking in shop windows at bakeries. When we stop to peer in the window of a cake shop, Raphael slides his arm around my waist. I do my best to ignore how amazing he smells and how good it feels to lean against his muscled body. I try not to think about him. I need to keep my eyes on those around me, taking in the looks people give us, trying to assess threats. Using the window's reflections, I keep an eye out for anyone who might be following us. Of the people who pass us by, I note two I find suspicious. A woman who makes a point to avoid looking at us, and a man who follows us briefly before breaking away. We stop to look at a flower shop with gorgeous wildflower blooms and crowns in the windows. I stand on my tiptoes, and Raphael leans down.
Two possible informants, I whisper in his ear. A woman and a man.
I saw, he murmurs. The man followed us because he enjoyed staring at your ass, for which I can't blame him. The woman avoided looking at us because she had a recent breakup and seeing a loving couple makes her want to scream.
How can you tell that the woman had a breakup?
Because I know how heartbreak looks,
he says darkly.
I sigh. If only she knew the truth about us.
Another inscrutable expression.
Maybe we should focus, like you said. Let's go to the tavern.
He takes my hand and leads me to the tavern, a stone building with blue shutters open to the light and candlelit tables set up on a wide stone terrace. Lanterns cast a wavering glow over the walls. Although we've been monitoring it for more than an hour, part of me is still scared of a trap. My muscles tense as I casually look to my left and right, making sure there are no armed guards waiting for us. My gaze sweeps over an ivy-covered wall that curves to the left and the fae ambling along the sidewalk to the right. We walk up to the tavern's blue door and Raphael pulls it open. Inside,
Sunlight pours through the windows onto wooden tables and tile floors. Rough-hewn beams span the ceiling. As we make our way to the polished oak bar, I check the back door, planning the best route in case we need to make a run for it. "Good afternoon," the barman says in French, wiping the bar with a cloth. He's human, but nearly tall as a fae, with braided ginger hair that flows over his shoulders.
"New in town?"
"We're here on our honeymoon," Raphael says in French, tinged with a fae accent that he's dialed up.
"We recently got married." "Congratulations."
"It was a marvelous wedding," I say, sliding my arm around Raphael's waist. I feel his muscles tense a little under his shirt. "On the beach with the sand through our toes?" The barman's hand pauses as he recognizes the agreed-upon phrase.
"Sounds marvelous. Maybe when I get hitched, I'll do it on the beach as well,"
he says, giving me the second part of the phrase. Raphael casually leans on the bar.
"We rented a small place nearby," he says.
The barman nods.
"It's a good place for a honeymoon. Lots of nice picnic locations and such." "I don't know how much we're going to leave the house,"
Raphael says with a smile. I look up at him, my gaze trailing over his strong jawline. "Oh, the bedroom," I add. A man at the bar snorts into his wine glass. He turns to Raphael and waggles his eyebrows. Good. By the end of the day, every human and fae in town will have heard about the horny couple in the cottage. It's a perfect cover for why we won't be leaving it.
"What can I get you?" asks the bartender.
"Some mead would be wonderful," I say.
"And a baguette and cheese,"
Raphael adds.
"We'll take it with us."
The barman pours two glasses of mead, then goes to the back and returns a couple of minutes later with a paper bag and a baguette sticking out the top. We both finish our mead, take the bread with us, and leave. Outside, I break the bread in two. As we expected, there's a little pouch baked inside, and inside the pouch are a key and a tiny map. I scrutinize the map, then scan the street until I find a small cottage with a garden outside, directly across from the Vale Mage's mansion. The cottage is narrow, and the second story has a steeply peaked roof. Blue shutters are wide open on two large windows on the top and bottom floor. Even in September, lavender still blooms out front, and ivy climbs the stone walls. "That one," I say, then rip off a chunk of bread and bite into it. I'm starving. We enter the garden, and the air smells heavy with wildflowers and a hint of marjoram. I slide the key into the front door and turn it. The lock seems old and rusty, and the door creaks on its hinges. Through the open shutters, light streams into a tiny room with white walls, a threadbare embroidered rug, and walls lined with bookshelves. Dust motes float in the air, catching the light. There's hardly any furniture in here, just a few wooden chairs and an aged harpsichord. On the other side of the hall is a tiny kitchen with a pale green cabinet, a wooden table, and a fireplace-style stove. Copper pots and pans hang from wooden ceiling beams. It's not even roomy enough for Raphael to stand upright. "We need to get the horses," I say.
"I'll go tonight,"
Raphael answers.
"The barman will let me keep them in the tavern stable."
I turn to a stairwell with aged wooden steps. When I climb to the top, I find a single bedroom. It's a cozy attic with an A-frame sloped wooden ceiling. Of course, there's only one bed. I hear the stairs creak behind me, and Raphael's deep voice ripples over my skin.
"I'll sleep on the floor."
"No need to be a martyr," I say. "We can just alternate." I walk to the window and peer through the old warped glass. Iron-gray clouds slide over the sun, casting shadows on the street. Across the road stands the large mansion with towering columns out front and the stone wall surrounding it. Two enormous fey guards stand before the gate, armed with halberds. I survey the mansion itself. Large, three stories high, with vines creeping up the stony walls. Through one of the windows I glimpse a figure. Someone sitting by a fireplace reading a book. I slip the spyglass from my pack and hold it to my eye. My heart skips a beat as I take him in. Pumpkin orange hair that runs past his shoulders and a glint of metallic eyes. He wears the dark robe of a Vale Mage. I already know his name from the intel MI-13 has on him. "It's him," I tell Raphael. "Caradoc." Even from here I can hear the faint humming that emanates from him. That's the man I'm going to kill. Chapter 41.
The skies opened up a few hours ago, and they haven't let up since. I wonder if Raphael is out there getting soaked on his scouting mission. In fact, I think it might actually be hailing right now. On the top floor of the attic, there's no fireplace, and a draft whistles through the cracks in the window. It's now 10 p.m., and I'm keeping the lights off so no one can see me staring outside. The autumn chill envelops me, and I shiver, gazing at the warm glow of the mansion across the way. Firelight wavers over Caradoc. He's back in his library with mead and a stack of books. Lucky man. Outside, the Fae soldiers are drenched from the storm, and I watch them change guards. Two more show up dressed in cloaks. The sodden guards stalk away, looking relieved. It's been 14 hours of surveilling the house, and I already recognize all four of them, even with the cowls over their faces. They are, as I've nicknamed them, the Silver Fox, Redbeard, Rosy Cheeks, and Ball Scratch. All named for their physical qualities, except for Ball Scratch, named after his favorite activity. Silver Fox and Rosy Cheeks are the ones arriving now. I check the time and mark it in the log. 10 p.m., guard shift change. Raphael and I have been swapping shifts at the window throughout the day, hardly speaking. One thing is already clear. Killing Caradoc, or even just getting close to him, will be extremely difficult. He's only left the mansion twice, surrounded by a retinue of six large, armed bodyguards. The mansion itself is fortified, not just by walls and guards, but by magical wards, too. From here, I've been able to spot the enchanted inscriptions and rune marks on the windows and doors. I might be able to disrupt them with my sentinel powers, but I'm not entirely sure. I've never done that before. For now, all we can do is keep watch and wait for an opportunity. The stairs creak, and I reach for one of my daggers. I turn, relaxing a little when I see that it's Raphael. His white shirt is soaked through, and his hair is drenched with rain.
It started to bloody hail.
Geneva's gone? I ask shortly.
On her way.
Geneva went out with our fastest horse to inform command of our progress and to check for updates about the rest of the teams. I will miss her company.
Ha!
No, I won't. What did you learn? I ask.
The servants are all people Caradoc knows personally, he says. When one of them is sick or missing, they have Fae from the town fill in. Never someone they don't know.
And what if they all fell sick at the same time, I ask. They'd have to get someone else then. My mind is already sifting through the ethics of giving food poisoning to an entire town. He considers that.
Maybe. But it'll also draw suspicion. Fae don't get sick as easily as humans do.
He's holding a white box wrapped with string, and he slides it onto the windowsill. The surface is slightly damp. What's this? I ask.
I remember you saying you liked lavender cake. And I saw some in the bakery.
He takes the spyglass from me and starts staring out the window. I take the box and sit on the bed, scooting back cross-legged. I pull the string on the box, unwrapping it. You got me cake? I'm still confused. This doesn't square with his rant about not liking me. Why?
Because you said you liked it. You told me you ordered the lavender cake, but you got blackberry.
I stare at his large back, stunned. That was 6 months ago.
Right.
Silver moonlight filters through the window, and I notice that his shirt has gone transparent from the rain. I glance down at the cake again. White frosting, little lavender blossoms. You told me that you don't even like me, so that's why I'm confused about the cake. He whirls away from the window to stare at me, his silver eyes piercing the dark. You said that you didn't know what foolish notions got into my head. I continue. You said that you never liked me, that I'm a spoiled girl who grew up in chaos and knew nothing of the real world, that all of this was a game to me. So, explain the cake, Raphael, because if it was all a ploy to bring out my power, why did you never explain that to me? I know he was at Avalon Tower this past week, just like I was. He leans down, palms pressed flat on the mattress on either side of my thighs. The light from the window sparkles on the droplets of rain on his eyelashes and his high cheekbones.
You never replied to any of the letters I left in your room.
My breath goes shallow. What letters?
The letters that I have been writing to you every day since your final trial.
he says slowly.
Rythe was always watching us, and I couldn't speak to you privately. He kept saying that you were my favourite. Rythe implied we were fucking, which would have got us both kicked out.
His gaze sweeps down me, and a droplet of rain falls from his wet hair onto my lap.
I explained all this in the letter after your final trial.
He straightens, folding his arms.
Serana said she'd pass them on.
I stare at him. Well, she didn't. My heart thuds, and the pieces start to slide together in my mind. She and Tana were very worried I'd get kicked out. Tana saw something in her cards, and she knew it was about Raphael.
He straightens and starts unbuttoning his wet shirt. I can't say I'm surprised. Rythe was spreading rumors that you and I were falling in love. He was going to use it as a pretext to get rid of both of us. Vivienne tried to convince him that you had notions about me, but that it wasn't reciprocated.
I arch an eyebrow. She couldn't have done it the other way around. Raphael grabs a towel and starts to dry himself off. I'm staring at his chest, my pulse racing. The moonlight tinges his muscles with silver and shadow. He towels off his hair.
I was trying to put the rumors to rest. Also, I needed you to be angry. That was in the letters I wrote too.
So you did want me to be angry? I tried to reassemble everything I know. After all that time telling me to ignore my emotions.
Anger wasn't my first choice.
He freezes, and his silver eyes cut to me.
You refused to let Naveen remove your telepathy, and that meant you needed your anger to pass. It was a risk, but it worked.
He starts to unbutton his trousers, and I'm tempted to stare, but one of us should be watching the mansion. I stand and cross to the window, picking up the spyglass. I stare through the lens, trying to focus on Caradoc, but I'm partially thinking about the fact that Raphael is peeling off his wet clothes in the same room with me, and also trying to understand what he's saying. Explain yourself, because it doesn't matter how clear you made it in the letters if I never read them.
I tried to teach you to master your emotions like I do, to let the creative force take control instead of expending energy on emotions. Anger can burn up magical force, but that's not how you operate, is it? You spend so much energy telling everyone what you think they want to hear, trying to soothe people and placate them, analyzing what people want, giving it to them so they stay calm. That's how you grew up, isn't it?
My throat tightens. Maybe. I steal a glance in the glass's reflection. Raphael is turned away from me, pulling on a dry pair of trousers. My gaze sweeps over his half-naked body.
When you finally screamed at me and told me what you thought, you let go of worrying about what other people felt, what they needed. You finally stopped wasting energy trying to manage other people's feelings. Then, you had more power for yourself.
He buttons his trousers and turns.
And what a power it was.
In the reflection, I watch him come up behind me.
Were you watching me just now, Nia?
He murmurs. My pulse races. No. I clear my throat. Fine, yes. He presses a hand against the window frame and stares through the window over my shoulder. I can feel the heat radiating off his body.
Getting to know you, I learned we don't all use magic the same way. You channel the creative force through your emotions, not by blocking them. I remember reading something Merlin had written about magic, and it didn't make sense to me. Merlin said he used his emotions, his heartbreak and love and anger, and that made his magic stronger. On our first mission, I saw you disable the entire veil, fueling your power with fear. And your anger at me gave you that explosive magic we saw on your final trial. It's what let you access a primal power for the first time in over 1,000 years, Nia. You're like the grapes at Dieu le Rose Guard.
I'm like the grapes? The corner of his lips curl.
Remember, the vintners would stress them to make them grow. They'd starve them of nutrients or water, and the grapes would grow stronger and enhance the flavor. For you, stress can make your magic thrive.
I shoot him a sly look. So the fact that I thought you were an asshole, that's what turned me into the next Merlin? A wry smile.
I didn't say next Merlin.
Have I mentioned the Avalon Steel, though?
I wonder if Nimue trapped Merlin in the oak because he wouldn't stop banging on about his Avalon Steel.
He muses.
But yes, the fact you thought I was, as you say, an asshole, helped you pass the Sentinel test.
I must admit, I didn't anticipate just how angry it would make you.
You are very convincing.
Across the street, the lights flick off in Caradoc's library. In the dark, all I can see is the glow of Raphael's silver eyes.
Might as well get some sleep while he does,
he says.
You take the bed.
Chapter 42. I take a bite of the lavender cake, and its sweetness melts on my tongue, with a hint of floral flavor.
Do you want some cake?
It's all yours.
He's already lying on the floor. While I eat, I glance out the window again, and my heart skips a beat. Silver Fox is staring right up at me, peering through a spyglass.
Raphael, I say quietly, why are Caradoc's guards spying on us?
What?
He leaps to his feet and joins me at the window.
Step back a bit.
They can't see us in the dark, can they?
Raphael shakes his head slowly.
No, but maybe that's the problem. They know honeymooners are staying here. We've had the lights off the entire night, which might be a bit weird. Look like you're getting ready for bed. We're going to need to add a bit of realism.
I drop the spyglass and Raphael lights the candle. I turn away from the window and pull off the dress I've been wearing all day. I'm wearing a silky camisole and underwear beneath it. The air is absolutely frozen in here, and goosebumps rise on my arms. Raphael turns to look at me, and his silver eyes burn like cold flames. He crosses over to me and presses his hands on either side of my head against the glass. Heat from his body warms my skin, and his gaze lowers to stare at my lips.
I'm going to need to kiss you.
For realism, I whisper. He brushes his thumb over my lower lip.
For the mission.
For England. He presses his lips against mine, claiming my mouth. There's hunger in his kiss, and molten desire slides through my belly. He reaches under my ass, lifting me up to rest on the windowsill, and his kiss deepens. I run my hands down his abs, even though I don't think Silver Fox can see the movement. Raphael threads his fingers into my hair, and I wrap my legs around him. As his fingers tighten in my hair, he pulls my head back, kissing me more deeply. He presses between my thighs, and I feel him growing harder. My hips roll against him. He smells like rainwater and musk, and I can no longer remember exactly what we're doing here, only that I ache for him, and I have since the first time he kissed me. A thrill shakes me to my core. He pulls away from the kiss, his eyes heated, breath heavy. One of his hands is still on my ass, the other in my hair.
I've wanted to kiss you for a long time.
But it's not allowed, I whisper. He looks half in a trance and shakes his head.
And Ginevra, I ask casually. She was coming out of your room, and you weren't wearing a shirt.
His eyebrows rise.
When was that?
When you got me my new wardrobe.
He hasn't released me from the windowsill yet, and his fingers flex slightly on my ass.
That was 6 months ago.
I shrug. You remembered the cake from 6 months ago? The candlelight gilds its perfect features.
Ginevra has no boundaries,
he says quietly.
That day she was delivering a report from the field and burst in when I wasn't ready for her. I suspect she did it intentionally. She's shallow and irritating.
I nod. Oh, you noticed that too. He lets out an agonized sigh.
I think that was a persuasive enough show for the guard, don't you?
Yeah. He lets go of me and I slide off the windowsill, already missing the warmth of his strong body. I blow out the candle, and when I turn to look outside, I see Silver Fox lowering his spyglass with a disappointed expression. He wanted more of a show. Honestly? So did I. In my camisole and underwear, I crawl under the covers and pull them around me. Rain hammers against the window. There's a thin blanket on top of the bed. With a little stab of guilt, I watch as he pulls it over himself on the hardwood floor. There's no heat in here, I say.
I've certainly slept in worse conditions.
I sit up in bed, and my gaze slides down over his broad shoulders, his powerful biceps.
I can't sleep in the same bed as you.
His voice sounds husky.
Perhaps your friends were onto something when they destroyed my letters. After all, Tana does see the future. And after what happened to Alex.
His gaze rakes down my body, lingering at my breasts, peaked beneath the silk.
Fuck.
A line forms between his eyebrows, his pale eyes burning with the heat of stars. What's wrong? I let the strap of my camisole fall down.
You look fucking perfect.
He drags his hand over his mouth, then pulls his thin blanket over himself and turns to face the other way.
I'm going to sleep.
Outside, the cold rain and hail are thundering down. That blanket won't be warm enough, I say. There's plenty of room in the bed, you know. It's not entirely true. It's just a double bed, and I know we'd be pressed against each other. I'm perfectly good at keeping to my side.
Good night, Pixie.
The wooden floor creaks as he rolls flat onto his back. Without a fireplace, the room is only about 50 degrees, and his blanket is more fit for summer. I'm fairly certain I won't be able to sleep. Won't be able to stop thinking about how it felt just then when he kissed me. The way he pressed himself against me. The way his tongue brushed against mine and I wanted to moan. I imagine myself lying in this bed with him, my face nestled into his throat. My thighs clench, and every inch of my skin has become sensitive and desperate for his touch. You're still awake, I say.
How do you know?
Because I've slept in a room with you before, and you snore horribly.
Bollocks, I do.
I smirk. Did you really not know that?
I don't have many nighttime guests.
Good. My throat tightens. He said he'd slept in worse conditions. Now I'm thinking of what he would have looked like as a traumatized little boy at the edge of the Brocilion forest, waiting for a sister who never showed up. Starving, sleeping on dirt and moss. I can't bear the thought of him lying cold on the floor anymore. He deserves the bed. Will you just sleep in the bed, Raphael? You're being an idiot. A loud sigh.
Well, how could I resist that charming invitation? Have you been taking etiquette lessons from Naveen?
The floor creaks as he gets up. My pulse races and I turn away from him, facing the window. The rain slides down the glass and I feel the bed sink a little as he climbs in. His body feels warm near mine. I lie completely still. If I move, I'll scare him, and he'll run away to the floor again, and I'll have to think of him as a little boy sleeping on the dirt. He spreads the thin blanket over the two of us, tucking us in. The air is heavy with his seductive scent, and in fact, as long as he's in the bed, I'm very much not thinking of him as a little boy. I'm thinking of how fucking perfect he looks as a man. The way the warm light of the candle caressed his muscles with shadows. I think of his hips moving between my thighs. He's not quite touching me, but he's close. I don't even do it on purpose. At least, I think I don't. But my hips shift back ever so slightly until my ass brushes against his hip.
Are you trying to tempt me?
He asks in a low murmur. Hmm? No. I peer at him over my shoulder. His jaw is set with tension, and he's gripping the blanket so tightly, it looks like he's going to rip it. I wouldn't dream of it, I say. It's just cold in here is all. And yet all my senses have narrowed to this one point, exactly where my ass is brushing against his hip, and I can't bring myself to move.
You're tormenting me on purpose, and I absolutely cannot stop thinking about the perfect shape of your breasts through that camisole, what your nipples would feel like in my mouth.
I realize, with a thrill of shock, that I'm hearing his thoughts for the first time. He lets out an agonized sigh and turns to me, curving his body around mine. Oh, gods, his thickly corded body feels amazing against my back. His arms slide around me, his chest like steel. My hips shift back into him just a little more, and I feel the enormous length of him against my ass.
Oh, gods, Nia, I want to explore every inch of your perfect body.
He's rock hard behind me, and an ache starts to build between my thighs. And suddenly, that's all I can think about, because apparently demi-fey men are blessed in every way. I wonder what he'd do if I reached back, slid my hand into his trousers, and stroked him over his underwear, just lightly up and down over that glorious length. And now I can think of absolutely nothing else. I swear I'm not doing it on purpose, but my hips shift back again. His muscles tense. His hand slides around my waist in a protective embrace. His fingers tighten on me, right above my hip bone.
Nia.
His voice sounds deep and husky. Yes, Raphael?
This is a terrible idea.
His breath warms my throat.
Especially since you screamed that I've never been good enough for you, and I never would be.
My cheeks flush. Did I scream that?
Yes, and it sounded like you meant it.
10 years ago, you kissed me, then entirely stopped speaking to me. It seemed very much like it was happening again. He leans closer, murmuring,
You don't know why I stopped speaking to you back then, do you?
Because you thought I was a spoiled American.
No. I started to fall for you the moment I saw you. I thought you were perfect. I still do. But your mother explained to me that you were mistaken. She said you thought I was rich, and she knew I wasn't. She told me that you were looking for someone wealthy. She said the moment you realized I was a great picker, you'd be gone. She was very persuasive at the time. I believed her then, but I don't anymore.
My jaw drops. Oh, gods. She really said that to you? I wish I could say that sort of thing wasn't in her character. You know what? I'm not as shocked by this as I should be. My body presses into his.
You're what I've been missing all these years.
His thoughts echo in my mind. Was this the first time I was hearing his thoughts? My mind flashes back to the vineyards all those years ago, when our fingers touched, and I heard the words, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I hear your thoughts, I whisper. A quiet chuckle.
Stop listening. They're about to become wildly inappropriate. I want to hear you moan my name.
His hand slides into one corner of my underwear. Now his thumb is brushing slowly up and down over my hip bone. With his free hand, he pulls the hair back from my neck.
This is a terrible idea, he repeats. Because if I can't strip you naked and fuck you hard, I will lose my mind.
I turn to face him and his mouth is so close to mine. Why is it such a terrible idea? I whisper. The moonlight washes over him. I find myself tracing the sinuous curves of the tattoos that coil over his shoulder and chest. We're just cold. They can't blame us for being cold. Do they want us to freeze to death?
I'm desperate for you. Desperate the way a starving man craves fruit. I've dreamed of this for years, and I want to taste every inch of your skin. Right, he says. Of course, we're just getting warm. For the mission.
For England. He pulls me in even closer against his hot, steely body. I sigh, closing my eyes. I'm thinking of him ripping off my underwear, parting my thighs, and filling me with his enormous cock. I'm also glad that he can't hear my thoughts, because his sounded significantly more romantic than mine. Really, I'm mostly thinking about his dick. His fingers stroke slowly up and down the hollow of my hips, and heat flows through me. My nipples push against my silky camisole. I'm trying to play it cool, but the sexual ache has my thighs clenching, and all I can think about is how desperately I want him to fuck me. His hand is too high, and yet with each slow stroke of his fingers over my skin, my core tightens. His fingertips glide over the top of my underwear, warmth over silk, a light touch. My breath hitches.
Take my time with you.
I imagine his mouth between my thighs kissing me. I turn back to him and tangle my fingers in his hair. My hip presses against his erection.
I need your mouth wrapped around my cock.
My heartbeat races, and desire flushes my chest. I want all the silk off my body. I want the heat, the glow, the delicious stroke of his bare skin against mine. I turn looking up at him and lick my lips. He stares at my mouth. My camisole is making me cold, I say.
Take it off, then.
I reach down to the hem and pull it away. I lie on my back, staring up at him. My breasts peak in the cold air, and Raphael's burning gaze rakes down my body.
Bloody hell. You're going to be the sweet, blissful death of me.
You're beautiful, I say.
You're not so bad yourself. You're the most gorgeous person I've ever seen.
He leans down and his mouth closes around one of my nipples. He licks, his tongue swirling. My breath goes shallow. I need him inside me.
Do you have any idea how long I've wanted you, Nia?
His mouth is on my breast, and one of his hands is curved around my ribs.
And after I took you to the lake, I couldn't stop thinking about how you looked with your dress clinging, the droplets of lake water on your eyelashes. You looked like you were born from that lake. Sexiest thing I'd ever seen.
He pulls his mouth from me again, staring at my breasts.
At least until now.
He traces my lower lip with his tongue. Desire courses through me and I open my mouth to him. He's kissing me tentatively. Teasing, shallow, tantalizing. He's holding back. And yet my body lights up for him like a lantern. He kisses me deeper, his tongue sliding in. As our tongues meet, erotic currents of magic skim over our bodies, filling us. He tastes like perfection. As he kisses me, he caresses my breasts. I moan lightly into his mouth. I don't want any of this to stop, ever. And this is why his kiss had the power to ruin my life all those years ago. Because already my body is desperate for him, and I can hardly remember the mission. His kiss grows insistent, desperate. His hand slides between my thighs, finding my wetness, and I groan into his mouth. My hips shift at the contact. As he touches me, his thoughts echo in my mind.
I've wanted this for so long, and right now I literally don't give a fuck about anything but you.
I move against his hand, my body swelling with pleasure. He's teasing me with agonizing sweetness, stoking my body into a fevered flame. He pulls away with a little bite to my lower lip. My core pulses, and he stares into my eyes. Even in the dark, I can see the silver and dark blue.
Can you still hear my thoughts?
He whispers.
How about I fuck you now?
Right to the point. He gets up to his knees, and I don't even wait for him to take off his trousers. I reach for them, freeing his erection, and my jaw drops in awe. I run my finger down his shaft.
God damn it, she will ruin me.
He reaches for my panties, gripping them hard. But he's not taking off my underwear yet.
Take my time.
Instead, he slides between my thighs and leans down to kiss my throat. His tongue sweeps over my skin in lazy, languorous strokes. My body is electrified, my heart pounding and my chest flushing with desire. I tilt my head back as he kisses me. Gently, he palms my breast, his tongue flicking over my nipple. Liquid heat pulses through me. I want him inside me.
Need to take my time with you. Need restraint. Want to bury myself in you.
I don't want him to take his time. As I wrap my legs around his hips, I ache for him. I reach out and stroke his cock again. He pulls his mouth from my throat.
Nia.
His voice is husky, and he says my name with a certain reverence. He sits up, his gaze stroking my body. His jaw clenches, and then he reaches for my underwear and pulls it down slowly to my thighs, then to my knees, my ankles, and off. He moves between my thighs, and his silver eyes gleam in the dark as he takes in the sight of my naked body. He looks almost awestruck. I let my legs fall open wider in invitation and start touching myself while he watches.
Have you thought of me before while you pleasured yourself?
Often, I say out loud.
I want to hear you moan.
He grabs me by the waist, pulling me closer to him. I can still hear his thoughts, but they're basically incoherent at this point, and the only fragment I get is, "Want you." Slowly, carefully, he slides into me. I gasp at the size of him as he sheathes himself in me, one inch at a time. Raphael!
My desire for you will burn me alive.
His metallic eyes pierce me, searching me. A pleasure that is painfully intense grips my body as he fills me completely.
Nia.
He says my name like a prayer.
I will lose myself in your heat.
He moves, slowly, and I twist my fingers in his hair, breathing hard. My desire feels incendiary, dangerous.
You'll be the end of me.
When he leans down to claim my mouth, I feel perfectly connected with him. With the way he's kissing me, fucking me slowly and carefully, I know exactly how he feels. I am filled with a sense of being cared for, as if his healing magic were pouring into me, stroking and caressing me. The erotic caress of his magic slips around me.
I've thought of this for so long,
he whispers,
of you.
Rocking with pleasure, I move my hips against him, seeking release. His fingers curl into my hair, tugging it a little bit. He moves faster now, thrusting into me, and his eyes meet mine.
Nia.
My name is a whisper on his tongue. I wrap myself around him, hands dancing over the hard muscles of his back. His lips meet mine again, kissing me as I seek my pleasure. My body clenches around him, thighs tightening, fingernails raking down his back as he reaches his pleasure at the same time as I find mine. My back arches, and stars dance in my vision. As my orgasm crashes through me, my mind goes blank. I wrap my legs around his hips, never wanting to let him go. "Raphael," I gasp. His eyes search mine, and he brushes a damp lock of hair from my face.
"Who could blame us?"
he whispers.
"We had to stay warm."
1 week later. I stand, staring through the spyglass. This time, Silver Fox and Rosy Cheeks are on guard. We've spent the entire week giving them a bit of a show, every now and then making out in front of the window, just a couple of newlyweds. And I actually felt like a newlywed at this point, because the moment Caradoc's lights go off, Raphael pulls me into bed and starts stripping away my clothes. Not that I'm complaining. The door creaks open, and I turn to see Raphael standing in the doorway. His expression is grim. My heart kicks up a notch. What's wrong?
"I'm afraid our honeymoon is over. I've just met with Ginevra. She brought an update from MI-13. They say that one of the task forces was discovered."
My stomach swoops. Which? I think of Serana and Tana, my heart clenching with fear.
"The sixth. A new agent named Benedict and a knight named Alduis. The only good news is that they didn't allow themselves to be taken alive. They slit their own throats before the Fae could torture them for intel."
I knew Benedict. He was sweet, shy, with a surreal sense of humor. I cannot in my wildest dreams imagine him slitting his own throat. Did Alduis have to do it for him? Suddenly, I feel as if someone had poured cold water over me. We've been in here for a full week, watching Caradoc, yes, but also very much enjoying every night when Raphael made it his mission to give me as much pleasure as possible. Strangely, this had started to feel like a real vacation, a trip for pleasure. But that's not reality, and all the warmth drains out of me. What would happen if we had to slit our throats? Would he do it for me? This is why love is not allowed. Neither of us would want the other to die. And sometimes agents have to. This also has me wondering if I should have stayed at home in the bookstore, where I was safe. But I suppose a life suffocated by boredom and isolation isn't much of a life at all. Anything else? I ask.
The other task forces are stumped as well. All the Veil Magicians are very closely protected in mansions warded with magic. They rarely leave unless they're surrounded by guards. Freya and Serana managed to sneak to the inner perimeter of their target's mansion but couldn't get through the wards.
Maybe a sentinel can. He nods.
There's one more thing. Tana reported that our time is growing short. If we don't act soon, we will all die.
Tana and her dire proclamations. Blood roars in my ears. Time to act, then.
Tonight, we'll use the darkness to our advantage.
His jaw clenches.
And yet I just want to keep you in here, where you're safe, and not let you get anywhere near the Fae. But that's not why we're here, is it?
I let out a long, slow breath. Raphael, this is what I've trained for. Chapter 43. Nightfall has wrapped the town in darkness. I stand inside our cottage, peering through a window into the street. Raphael is out there, and I'm mentally willing him not to get caught. My heart speeds up, and I check my knives again, one in my boot, one hidden in a secret sheath within my sleeve, one strapped to my back. I sharpened all of them before we left, even though they were already sharp enough. Still, the ritual helped calm me. Apparently, I've become the sort of person who soothes herself by sharpening blades. The Nia of 6 months ago, the one who worked in a bookstore, would be alarmed by this transformation. Caradoc's mansion and its enormous walls dwarf a little neighboring cottage, one very much like this one, one that could easily go unnoticed next to such a palatial home. Except unlike this one, the little cottage across the street is now on fire. Flames climb the walls, Raphael's skillful work, a dancing scarlet and orange blaze against the shadows. In front of the mansion gates, Silver Fox finally notices the smoke coiling into the air.
"Fire!"
Fire!
He shouts in Fey, running back toward the mansion. I stare at the smoke outside, which is thickening into a heavy black cloud. Even inside and at this distance, my eyes are starting to tear up. This small town has no fire station, and not a fire hydrant in sight. Pandemonium is about to erupt on this street. More shouts ring through the air. This is my moment. I step outside, blinking the smoke out of my eyes. A breeze ripples over my skin, thick with ash. Just as we planned, the streets fill up with people running for buckets of water to douse the flames. Silver Fox runs out from the front gate, carrying a fire extinguisher that looks comically small, given both the size of his body and the ferocity of the blaze. I'm genuinely impressed that Raphael was able to stoke such an intense fire so quickly. Someone has dragged a stack of large tin fire buckets into the road. I grab one and carry it inside to fill it with water at the cottage sink. Once it's full, I drag it outside again. The weight of it tugs on my arm, and I heave it across the street toward Rosy Cheeks, screaming at him in Fey to help before the whole neighborhood burns down. He glowers at me, unwilling to leave his post. I lift the bucket toward him, then falter, the bucket nearly tumbling from my hands. I gasp at the guard. "At least help me carry it," I shout. "It's too heavy."
"Fine."
He takes a step closer, gripping the bucket in one hand, and we shuffle along. From the corner of my eye, I see Raphael move behind us, a shadow in the night. I let go of the heavy bucket, and the weight of it makes Rosy Cheek stumble. From behind us, Raphael hits the guard's head with the pommel of his sword, and the guard crumples. Raphael sheathes his weapon, and we grab the unconscious guard, dragging him through the gate. In the chaotic night, no one notices a thing. Once inside, we drag the guard between the rosebush and the towering stone wall. The shadows envelop him. "What if he wakes up?" I whisper.
"We're not going to be here that long,"
Raphael says. We hurry to the front door. As soon as I get closer, I can sense the unseen ward pushing us away. But this magic feels very different from the veil. I hear no hum, and when I focus, I can't sense the same tangled weave of energy. Faintly, I can feel its power thrum over my skin, raising goosebumps on my body.
"Can you disrupt it?"
Raphael asks. Adrenaline courses through my veins. I can try. I concentrate, summoning my sentinel powers. Focusing, I search for an image of the ward in my mind, but it's hard to get a feel for its dimensions. There's nothing to channel my powers at. I try sending them out, as if I'm feeling my way in a dark room, searching for something, anything. But as far as my magic is concerned, there's nothing there. I shake my head. I can't. I don't have a sense of it. The shape or the color, the sound, it's blank. Raphael frowns at me, and I see the flicker of worry in his expression. If I can't get through the wards, the other agents won't fare any better. The Veil Magicians are too protected, and our time is running out.
"Nia,"
Raphael whispers sharply. He grabs my hand and pulls me behind a stone column. From the shadows, I peer out. Silver Fox stands before the gate, frowning in confusion. He's noticed his missing friend.
"Wait here," Raphael says softly in my ear. "I'll handle him."
I grab his arm and drag him back.
"What?"
he whispers. "Maybe he knows how to unlock the wards," I say. "Let me check." He hesitates, then nods. I wait until the guard turns the other way, searching the street. Then I move through the shadows. With the thick smoke in the air and the chaos outside the gate, the guard doesn't see or hear me as I draw closer. I concentrate, tugging at my telepathy, letting the powers stretch through my body. I hide behind the wall, then carefully stretch out an arm. From the other side of the gate, I brush my fingertips over his back as lightly as I can, then dive into his mind.
"Did Atale go to help with the fire as well? But he said he would wait at the gate. What if the fire gets to the mansion? We might need to evacuate Caradoc. But where is Atale?"
Gritting my teeth, I delve deeper, searching for anything I can find about the wards. How can we get through the wards? The answer lies there, just under the surface of his worried thoughts. The wards are easy to get through as long as you're permitted to enter the mansion. Then you just touch the door and chant the incantation, and the door opens. Which doesn't help us at all. Raphael and I aren't permitted. He feels my finger on his back and starts to turn around. I yank my arm away, quickly retreating into the shadows. He opens the gate and takes a step inside. Time moves at a snail's pace. If he peers to the right, he'll see me. A desperate idea blooms in my mind. Stepping forth, I touch him once again, but as I do, I summon both my powers, Violet and Red. They fuse together, sentinel and telepathy twining and blending into a raspberry-hued pulsing power. I force it into the guard's mind, breaking down his mental defenses. He senses the intrusion, and while his body freezes, his psyche is trying to break free. But I am everywhere. In his thoughts, his emotions, his memories. His overwhelming emotion is fear because of the fire and the chaos and his missing friend. I whisper a treacherous thought. Just open the mansion's front door, then you will be safe. His eyes scan the garden, searching for the person who's touching him, hurting his mind. No, don't look around. Death will follow. I can feel the thud of his terrified heart, can sense his erratic breathing. Walk up to the door of the mansion. Get inside, and then everything will be all right. He totters forward. I keep close behind him, still touching, as he lumbers up to the front door. I never let him pull away, maintaining the telepathic channel between us. I whisper encouragement in his mind. Yes, just a few more steps. Open the door, and then everything will be fine. He touches the door and whispers an incantation. The thrum of the ward disappears. Exhaling, I pull back from him. Before he can recover, Raphael smashes the pommel of his sword into Silver Fox's skull. I shiver with the sentinel's chill, feeling nauseous. My sight goes double with the effort I exerted. Raphael grips me by the waist, and I let him lead me inside to find Caradoc. Chapter 44. The air outside is thick with acrid smoke, but inside, the mansion is somehow worse. Toxic. Sickly. Out of nowhere, I think of Mom. Now that the noises of the chaos in the street are muffled, I can hear the hum of Caradoc's veil magic much more clearly. We walk softly over an ornate rug in the foyer, and it mutes our steps. After a week of spying on him, we know that Caradoc spends the majority of his time on the second floor, in his library. Raphael glances at me and raises his eyebrows, trying to ascertain that I'm okay. My mind is still chaotic, bits and pieces of it cluttered with the guard's thoughts. But I give him the thumbs up and pull the knife from my boot. Raphael unsheathes his sword, and we both creep deeper into the front hall toward a heavy set of double doors. By now, we've already mapped the house as best as we could by watching it through the windows. We chose our moment carefully, 10 at night. At this time, there's a changeover in the staff between the evening crew and the late-night shift. There's still a cook in the kitchen, and Caradoc's personal maid, who is hopefully in her quarters. As I think about her, I get a flash of memory, kissing her passionately, hidden together in the pantry. She's human, and I'm Fae. Not my memory, but one that belongs to Silver Fox. It makes me dizzy, and I have to stop just for a moment. Raphael glances back at me, and I motion for him to go on. The door opens smoothly, and the stairs beyond are thankfully stone, not creaking wood. No sign of the cook or the maid, but I still can't shake the feeling that someone is watching and hearing us, that the mansion itself knows someone has intruded. As we climb the stairs, the humming grows louder, and the Veil Mage's magic buzzes over my skin. On the second floor, Raphael turns toward the door of the library. But I grab his arm and shake my head. I can hear the humming coming from the mage's bedroom. Raphael turns, and I follow behind him. As he touches the door handle, he glances at me. My mind roars with fear. I nod to him, and he flings the door open. He storms inside, and I rush in behind him. The walls of the bedroom are painted a deep maroon flecked with black, like a rotting rose. Caradoc stands by the window with his back to us. From here, he's watching the fire. Something's wrong. I should have noticed it earlier. The humming, just a little too loud, and it surrounds us now. I glance up. The entire ceiling shimmers, a misty veil arching over us. A trap. As Caradoc turns toward us, he lets the veil drop. Cold fear crashes over me, and I summon my sentinel powers. I hurl them into the deadly mist around us, but it's a fraction too late for Raphael. Tendrils of the mist reach him, and he stumbles and falls, his sword clattering on the floor. Cold panic rakes its claws through me. My magic dissolves most of the veil, but it's still clinging to Raphael, wrapping around his chest. I kneel by his side, using all of my mental energy to pull the magic away from him, one strand at a time. If any of it pierces his heart or his skull, He's gone. I hear Caradoc's footsteps behind me, and as I glance back at him, he clamps his hands around my throat. His fingers tighten, and he knocks me over, pressing his knees against my chest. I struggle, desperately trying to breathe. Frantically, I try to keep my mind on Raphael, feeling for the magic that surrounds him. All my focus is intent on the wisps of pearly death snaking around his body. My vision goes dark, starry. I rip the last strands of veil magic off him. Time slows down. My head spins as Caradoc's iron fingers squeeze, crushing my throat. I strike at his arms as hard as I can, and his fingers loosen. I take a deep, ragged breath, but he's still on top of me, reaching again for my neck. I use my magic to creep into his thoughts. I will take over his mind, make him hurl himself out the window. But as soon as I enter his thoughts, I realize how impossible that is. Caradoc's mind isn't simple like Wraith's or Silver Fox's. In fact, I can hardly make sense of his mind at all. He is hundreds of years old, maybe 1,000. He's seen empires rise and fall, had 17 wives and innumerable lovers. He doesn't care for love or money or power. His thoughts are maze-like, a tangle. Trying to control him is like trying to swim up a waterfall. Instead, I find myself getting lost. Swallowed. Panicking, I try to pull away, but I can't find my way back to being Nia. I'm becoming a part of Caradoc, and I can't feel the pain of my own suffocation anymore. Because now, I'm seeing what he knows about the invasion. Images and memories flit through my brain too quickly for me to process properly. There's a training academy. Fey herbalists walking between Fey soldiers lying on beds. A dragon being injected with something and roaring with pain. A large Fey army marching with dragon banners. A tincture created by Fey alchemists. A brew of strange herbs mixed with iron. That's what Oberon has been working on. Iron weapons stopped their army all those years ago, but the tincture will make them immune. He's creating a Fey army impervious to its effects. Iron is the only way humans have held the Fey back. Without it, they'll burn through humanity like wildfire, destroying everything in their way. We knew the Fey were planning something, that we needed to stop them, but we didn't realize we were already too late. We wanted to destroy the Vale, but it doesn't matter. The Fey were about to drop it themselves. They're going to send their army over the border. Caradoc was at the meetings when they planned the invasion. He's seen the map spread out on a table, marked where the forces will enter. I hear the plan for the fake assault on southern France, the one everyone would expect. But that's not the real attack. Oberon is headed for England. If only I could warn them. But he's choking me again. Now I can see myself through Caradoc's eyes, lying on the floor, mouth opening and shutting, desperate for breath, eyes bulging. I'm seconds away from death.